Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is a Thursday. We are jammed today. Thanks so much for joining us live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on all our platforms today. Fox Sports Radio, iHeart Radio, Sirius XM Channel 83, Fox Sports 1. We're on FS1 today. We're doing a radio version on television. Not quite as slick and highly produced, but we're on the air. Our podcast, thanks so much for listening. Our numbers for our podcasts are way up and our digital. We want to thank you. Many people, yesterday I was driving around and walking around, and I saw a couple people, a UPS driver would stop and say, thanks for being on the air. Just like to say thank you. This is helping me. If I can bring some normalcy to your life, thank you. I'm glad to do it, but you're bringing some normalcy to my life, and I'd like to thank you for it. It makes my days feel somewhat constructive. So we're both doing each other a solid here. We are packed today. Peter Schrager, 30 minutes from now, the Philadelphia Eagles just made a great move. Boy, the rich are getting richer. The smart GMs in this league, the Chargers, the Eagles, the Ravens are doing really good work right now. Teams are getting better. I want to start with a team that hasn't been good, but I think is about to become incredibly formidable. And we know in this league, it is a coach quarterback league. Even Belichick get fired. Belichick got fired when he didn't have the right quarterback. Okay, so it starts with a quarterback. But hand in hand, 1A is the coach, Miami Brian Flores. Here's the story today from the Miami Herald. The Dolphins, 13 picks, are ready to put a bunch of them together, offer them to Cincinnati to get Joe Burrow. If I'm Cincinnati, I would do it. I don't think Burrow's that much better than everybody else in terms of quarterbacks. In fact, I think if Tua's healthy, I like Tua. But Burrow can play. The Dolphins want to trade up, and they'll give a bunch of picks to do it. So this is interesting. Most of us are products of our environment. I certainly am. Michael Jordan didn't do anything after James Worthy left in college and before Scottie Pippen. Even Michael Jordan, best basketball player ever, needed Phil Jackson, needed Scottie Pippen to get into the championship ring. Without him, couldn't beat Boston and Bird and McHale, couldn't beat the Pistons, Isaiah Lambeer and the fellas. So Andrew Luck is rare. Worst O-line in the league, worst team, wrong GM, wrong coach, 11-5 as a rookie. John Elway, Dan Marino, Andrew Luck are maybe three of the most gifted quarterbacks. Not winningest, not the most rings I've ever seen. They were going to win regardless. They were just going to win. I'm not saying Super Bowls, but to go 11-5 with a bad team, the wrong coach, and a bad GM, Andrew Luck is rare. Joe Burrow is not any of those guys. But I like Joe Burrow a lot more in Miami than I do in Cincinnati. This is different because I think Burrow's a B-plus prospect. I think Andrew Luck's an A-plus prospect. I think Trevor Lawrence next year is an A-plus prospect. Burrow's a B-plus to a low A, meaning he's going to need help. He can't – said this about Baker Mayfield. He's just not good enough to overcome dysfunction in Cleveland. He's not. That Luck can do it. Trevor Lawrence can do it. Marino can do it. By the way, Troy Aikman's great. He couldn't do it. He was 1-15 until he got pieces around him. Okay, and Aikman's great. So Joe Burrow in Miami's different. First of all, it's a better free agent market. Okay, you can get players to no state tax and aqua water. Players don't want to really play in Cincinnati. They'll go to Miami. Second of all, the division's easier. You don't have to face the Ravens' defensive front. You don't have to face the Steelers' front seven. And by the way, the Browns, the strength of the Cleveland Browns is not the receiving core. It's their D-line personnel. You don't have to face him anymore. It's the dysfunctional Jets. It's New England without Tom Brady. It's Buffalo that's good but not special. So I get an easier division. I get a better free agent market. I get a richer owner. Stephen Ross, unlike Mike Brown, Stephen Ross is one of the top five richest owners. He'll spend money. Money's not the problem in Miami. The other thing is the weather. Cincinnati is cold and windy by Thanksgiving. Miami, the only thing you deal with is September humidity. And Joe Burrow does not have a great arm. It's fine. It's Tony Romo. It's good. It's not special. It's not going to make those big throws in wind. And I also think Brian Flores is a better coach than Zach Taylor. Now, we don't know for sure if either can coach, but here's what I know. Brian Flores, last nine games last year with Miami and their personnel, 5-4. Belichick with Brady and his personnel, 4-5. Miami was a better football team down the stretch than New England. I'm not joking. Look it up. And I think Flores is really sharp. I think I said this last year. I would have given him, if I had a ballot for my top three coaches of the year, wouldn't you put Brian Flores at three? I mean, seriously, what he overcame, what he did. So Joe Burrow in Miami, oh, all right, that'll work. He's not going to get beat up by the Ravens front. He's not going to get beat up by the Steelers front seven. He's not going to get beat up by Cleveland's front. No, he's going to face some dysfunctional teams. And by the way, we've said this before. Where you land matters. Sam Darnold and Baker, dysfunctional organizations, losing records. Lamar gets the Ravens. Mahomes gets Andy Reid and the Chiefs. Josh Allen gets a very good coaching staff and a new GM in Buffalo. Carson Wentz gets Philadelphia. What a shock. Winning records. It's crazy how it works, isn't it? Where you land matters unless you're Elway, Marino, Andrew Luck, or next year Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence will be able to overcome a lot of junk. So this is interesting. Dolphins interested in a big sweeping trade to get Joe Burrow. My gut feeling is Cincinnati's not smart enough to do it. If I was Cincinnati and could get six picks, drop down a few slots, and still get a quarterback, I'd do it in 2 seconds. In 2 seconds. But, you know, Cincinnati's history is they don't take any gambles in the draft. So this is interesting. Like, you thought I was going to do a show without Brady. Please, not possible. Tom Brady's goodbye call left Bill Belichick, quote, a little shocked. Belichick told a friend, he was a little shocked. Tom Brady said, Bill, I'm leaving. After speaking with Kraft and Belichick, according to a source, Brady felt like there was a huge weight lifted off his shoulders. He's excited and fired up. So we talk about this from time to time. Everybody's got a hole. There's no perfect broadcaster, no perfect athlete, no perfect coach. The four best football coaches in my lifetime, Bill Walsh, Jimmy Johnson, Bill Parcells, and Bill Belichick. But they've all got a hole. And Belichick's hole is he lacks warmth. He won't play psychologist. He's rigid. He's not viewed as friendly and warm. And Tom Brady's all about warm. Tom Brady just chose the Tampa Bay Buccaneers over a much better roster with the Chargers. Why? Closer to family. That's who Tom is. You watch the documentary Tom vs. Time. He's a family guy. Hugging his sons. Just the way he lives his life. His sister, his dad. I mean, he moved closer to his family going to Tampa. There were better places to go with better rosters, better offensive lines, better personnel, more winning in their recent history. No, he chose Tampa. That's why, and I said before, I never took Tampa seriously. I never even thought about Tampa. I said, I'd hear the rumors, and I thought, Tampa? That he's too big for that brand. And I got to go to Tampa. He went to Tampa. And this is where Parcells and Jimmy Johnson are better than Belichick. There's a warmth to him. I don't know Bill Parcells. Talked to him six or seven times, maybe more. I do know Jimmy Johnson, I think, fairly well. There is a warmth to him. I've stood next to Jimmy and seen him get emotional more than once. He's got incredibly close football friends. Bradshaw and Dave Wannstedt. They tell hysterical stories. Every Sunday when I come into Fox, when I do that weekend Fox NFL kickoff show with Gonzalez, Vic, Crystal Thompson, Peter Schrager, when I do that show, first thing I do every time, I go over and talk to Jimmy Johnson for about 15 minutes before I go into my production meeting. Jimmy's fantastic. And there's a warmth to Jimmy. And Bill Parcells, their psychologist. The other was 2 days ago, 3 days ago this weekend. Was it Sunday or Monday night? I watched the two Bills. It was Belichick, Parcells, a 30 for 30. And my takeaway on this is that Parcells, you know, Parcells is verbal and he's a talker and he laughed at himself and he was embarrassed. Bill is stoic. Bill grew up with a mom that spoke seven languages and a dad that helped create scouting. It's a very academic childhood. Academics can be cold. Academics can be rigid. Academics are data, research, and fact-based. Sometimes Belichick is cold. Tom Brady is warm. And if you listen to players, how often have I brought a player on my show in the last 2 years, 3 years? And when you talk about their relationship, Andy Reid's a prime example where they'll say about Andy Reid, Chris Jones said this. Who do we have? Frank Martin said this. They're like, you know, Andy cares about me. Andy cares about me. It matters. I mean, don't you kind of want to think your boss cares about you? You know, beyond the money you produce for him and the revenue and the ratings and the trophies you produce for him? Kind of matters. You want to know they care about you. And that's the hole in Belichick's game. He's not pro player. He doesn't have a lot of warmth. He's academics to a fault. The socialization part, I mean, we unless you live in New England, many people didn't even know until a couple years ago he had his son on the staff. I mean, it's just that's just Bill's hole. And everybody's got one. But Belichick was apparently shocked when Tom Brady called him. So there you go. I think it's 2020. Athletes more than ever want to be appreciated as humans, not just football players.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I live in Los Angeles, which has been raining for about 2 weeks. We have a break now in the weather, which is good news. We can go outside, walk, and jog a little. That's all good. It is. The air is clean. I can see the Hollywood sign. That's the good news. I have not liked, and I've said this, though I live in Los Angeles, I've not been a fan the way the Rams are constructed. I think it's a vanity franchise. Some of it is business. I completely understand. It's a very, very distracted market. And there, it's a market with a lot of options. Right now in Los Angeles, you have the best baseball player, Mike Trout, in Orange County. The second best player in baseball, Mookie Betts, for the Dodgers. You have the best player in the NBA, LeBron. Many people think Kawhi Leonard's 2 and Anthony Davis is 3 or 4 or 5. It is a loaded sports market. You've got 2 soccer teams. You got a baseball team, Dodgers, that draws over 4 million. 2 NFL teams. The 2 probably best NBA teams. You got the beach. You've got great weather. You've got hiking. It's a distracted market. And so the Rams come from St. Louis. The Rams were never really LA's team. They were Orange County's team. LA was more USC football and Raiders country. So you get the Rams, and they want to make a splash. Lakers, Dodgers, let's make a splash. And they get Todd Gurley's on billboards, and they get Brandon Cooks, and they go out and get some stars. And I didn't like the way they were constructed. So I'm not saying this just matter of fact. It was fun, but it was 6 or 7 big contracts, paying guys early, looking for stars at positions that kills your depth, and eventually, you got to get rid of really good players. And if you get one of your stars gets hurt, i.e. Todd Gurley, you can melt as a franchise. So this morning, the report, the Rams are looking to make Brandon Cooks available in the draft. Didn't like it when they got him. I think he's considered retirement early because of some concussion issues. He's kind of a one-trick pony, good player, not worth the money they're paying him. And I like him. But if he's your best receiver, he's probably number 3 on most teams. A good kid, good player, never liked the move. Todd Gurley, they paid him early. Story this morning, the Rams are going to move on without their running back, Todd Gurley. I've got some intel on this. Gurley got hurt and has changed. He's not a great locker room guy. He's not as committed. Last year, it was incredible. We kept saying this over and over. It's very heavy in the locker room in Los Angeles. They're being very quiet, covert about Gurley. They won't talk about it. Sean McVay is, you know, projecting, oh, it's on me, it's my fault. That's not what was being said behind closed doors. What was being said is, how do we get out of this contract? So there's reports this morning he's on the trade block. Nobody's going to trade for Todd Gurley unless the Rams pay 75% of the contract. He's no longer a franchise running back. He's just a talented football player. But this is what the Cowboys are doing. So they're paying Amari Cooper and Zeke and they're everybody on the offensive line and DeMarcus Lawrence and Jalen Smith, like the Rams, they're paying six or seven rock stars. They're paying them early. And if DeMarcus Lawrence gets hurt next year, just like Gurley for the Rams, the Cowboy defense will be awful. It was already at the end of last year bad. Now they've lost their best corner, Byron Jones. A team came and paid for him. Now they lost their safety, Jeff Heath. They also lost Malik Collins, a defensive lineman, and Randall Cobb, their second-best receiver. Jason Witten is gone. Robert Quinn for the Cowboys led them in sacks. He's gone. They, like the Rams, and Gurley's injury. The Cowboys are a DeMarcus Lawrence injury away from being pathetic defensively and needing Dak to drop 32 a weekend. I don't like the way these teams are built. Now, I don't have a problem paying for a handful of stars. I just saw today the Philadelphia Eagles made a move, which I like. I understand. You got to pay your quarterback. I do not think you have to pay a running back top dollar. The Eagles don't. I do not believe you have to pay wide receivers top dollar. The Eagles don't. I do think for an elite quarterback, an elite left tackle, an elite defensive lineman, I'm all in. And if you can get a great corner, and there's not many of them, I'd spend money there. Even Patriots, even Belichick will pay for a corner. But I watched the Cowboys, and I watched the Rams, and I'm seeing the Rams. Rams have now lost because they can't afford anybody. They lost Michael Brockers, very good defensive lineman. Dante Fowler, who was kind of situational but did add a pass rush. Corey Littleton, linebacker. Now Brandon Cooks. The Rams and the Cowboys, Stan Kroenke and Jerry Jones are best friends. Maybe this is a business model that ups the, you know, the net worth of the franchise. But we're a year out of that Super Bowl. A year away from the Rams Super Bowl. They're not the same franchise. They got a running back issue. They got a defensive line issue they have to address. They just lost a very good linebacker. I don't like it. I don't think this pays six or seven rock stars. It crushes your depth. It crushes it. And you have to lose really good football players. You better. And by the way, the Rams have also given up a lot of top draft picks to make some of these deals happen. So good luck getting the next star in the third round, because you're not going to get him in the first. You don't have the pick.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Peter Schrager, Fox Sports, ace NFL reporter at pschrags.com. Just at pschrags on his Twitter account. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Good morning, football show, NFL Network as well. Schrags, how are you?
We're hanging in there. It's a crazy time, and Colin, I cannot thank you enough for offering a distraction and doing the job you do. Everyone needs this right now. I appreciate you, brother.
Okay, so Philadelphia, I like Philadelphia. I think Howie Roseman's one of the really sharp dudes. So Malcolm Jenkins on the back end, we'll let you go. Thanks for your service. Slay now at corner. I got to tell you, I look at that Philadelphia roster. I did it last year. I got sucked in. This team, if they can stay healthy, because you know they're going to address the receiver in the draft, I like what Philadelphia has done so far. Your thoughts on it?
I love what Philadelphia has done, and this is why you got to love what Howie Roseman's all about. I could tell you they were very, very in on Byron Jones. Byron Jones opts to go to the Dolphins, where there's no state income tax, and he can go to, you know, Brian Flores and work on. And that really was a setback for the Eagles. They were all in on Byron Jones, hoping as if he was their number one target.
Wow.
They don't get Byron Jones. They bounce right off the mat, and they might have got a better player in Darius Slay. And that's what makes the Eagles so fascinating. There's always contingency plans. So they get Hargrave, the big defensive tackle who's going to pair with Fletcher Cox up front. Suddenly their defense in that Jim Schwartz wide nine, you now have Hargrave and Fletcher Cox, two of the best defensive tackles in the sport up front. And now you have Darius Slay in the defensive backfield. And you look at yourself and say, okay, this isn't bad. We did pretty good. We didn't get Byron Jones, but you know what? We're going to be just fine. And that's how the Eagles roll. They're never going to be one of these 4-12, 5-11 teams. They always have a contingency plan, and they always get off the mat.
So I just said this before you came on. The Rams and the Cowboys are doing business with 6 or 7 rock star contracts, kills depth. And I look at Dallas this morning. So they lose Robert Quinn, their sack leader. They lose their only elite corner. They lose Jeff Heath. They lose Randall Cobb. They lose a veteran culture guy, Jason Witten. And, you know, I see all these big contracts, but I look at that Cowboy defense, much like the Rams offense. They were one injury, Todd Gurley, away from kind of being a mess. I look at that Cowboy defense this morning, Shregs. If DeMarcus Lawrence had a setback for a couple of months, this defense is not good. It's not good. I don't like what I see in Dallas. I don't know. I look at Dallas and the Rams and I don't see the depth, and I don't think they've had very good off season so far.
You know what's going to be a real, real interesting piece to whenever football does come back? All these new coaches coming into these teams who will have no contact with their players. So in comes Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator. But they're going to have very little contact with these defensive players. So if you're already behind the eight ball and saying that we lost a lot of talent, now you look at your roster and it's like, okay, we're going to have to fill some patches in there. But you can't even learn the defense in a face-to-face setting and get into the building. How are you expected to just be up and going? So I look at the consistency, I guess, among staff. And if I'm already projecting into next season, who's bringing back a lot of talent? Who's bringing back their same defense? Who's bringing back the same defensive coordinator? For the Cowboys, it's a new defensive coordinator, a new head coach, and a lot of new guys on the field. Of course you have a skepticism about it. And I look at that defense. They paid Jalen Smith big money, and they played DeMarcus Lawrence big money. We'll see how this thing goes, but you are spot on. You lost a lot of key pieces. Byron Jones was never even an option because you had to deal with Dak, Amari, and Ezekiel Elliott. And now you're looking at a completely new roster and a completely new defensive front and a completely new defensive scheme. Oh, not to mention a new head coach. And they're not all going to be talking in the same room for months.
Brady and the Bucs deal, it's not official yet. Anything holding it back? Is it complicated physical stuff? What is it?
It's so complicated. So I heard you talking about Peter King before we came on here. What I think Peter's saying, and I'm with him on this, is, Colin, I was on your show a couple weeks ago, and we did a Brady Bunch motif because 8 teams were banging down the door for Tom Brady. But when the thing came down to it, Brady canceled some out. I think Indianapolis, you're spot on. I also think the Raiders, he said, I'm good. I think the Dolphins, he said, I'm good. But when it came down to it, it was going to be Tampa or the Chargers. Yeah. I could tell you, as you had early in the day, indications were that L.A. was not an option, which kind of narrowed things down to Tampa. But those Tampa guys weren't doing a parade around Tampa Bay because they hadn't gotten word from Brady yet. How a lot of those Tampa Bay guys were finding this out was that everyone was tweeting about it, and Brady wasn't outright saying, no, that's not true yet. So the lack of communication is one thing. The second thing is this whole physical deal. So if you haven't been following exactly the logistics and the nooks and crannies to it, Brady has to get a physical before this thing is approved. The Buccaneers have that, and they're right. However, he can't get on a private plane. He can't come down to Tampa, and it has to come down to an independent doctor around where Brady is. Now, Brady's in New York at the moment. So both the Buccaneers and Brady's representation, which is Don Yee, they have to feel comfortable with any random doctor that's assigned by the NFL to go and do this. And there's a $30 million a year contract riding in this. I mean, this is also season tickets, everything. And this might be a doctor who neither the Buccaneers or Tom Brady have ever met before or even know. It's a very complicated thing. Everyone's taking the great precaution because of COVID-19 that you can't get Brady out there. But this could be very, very interesting. And there's a new CBA with new language. And while this is all going on, all of the Buccaneers folks have families at home who are in isolation, who are dealing with real-world problems. This is one of the most complicated contracts that's going to come through because they can't even have a press conference to announce that Tom Brady is the new quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They can't even bring him in the facility because of what's going on in the world right now.
By the way, I thought the Brady Niner rumors, I just couldn't get my brain around it. I couldn't figure out why San Francisco would do that. But I was told by a GM in the last 48 hours it was real. Do you have any insight on the Niners backing out of the Brady sweepstakes?
I think there was actual discussion, and the fact that you never saw Kyle Shanahan or John Lynch or Parag Marathi, who handles a lot of those contracts, come out and outwardly say, hey, Jimmy's our guy, that led to that thing being more than just smoke, and it might have been fire. But in the in the hours before free agency, and I could say even the days before free agency, they had moved on from that discussion. They didn't even have it really legitimately inside their building, but they weren't really silencing it. What they had to focus on is what they were going to do with their defense. And I think it was fascinating, the kind of the machinations that they pulled to bring back Armstead, to get a first-round pick for Buckner, and also get back Jimmy Ward. Just for your listeners, if you're a Niners fan, Armstead and Buckner were represented by the same agents, and that's Joel Siegel and Chaffee Fields. Those two guys split up over the last 6 months. Chaffee Fields took Armstead with him. Joel Siegel, another top agent, he took Buckner with him. So the Niners had to do this delicate dance where they were dealing with two agents that used to be partners but no longer are, and they had to make sure that they had a trade in place with Buckner before they can negotiate a deal with Armstead, so they knew they were at least getting something for one of them and not losing the other one. In fact, they actually end up getting a first-round pick. They get Buckner, and then they get Jimmy Ward to sign with them despite offers for more money at other places. So major, major deal by the Niners, and Tom Brady's an afterthought when they can bring back that defense.
Okay, I want to talk briefly about Carolina, Arizona, and the Dolphins. Let's talk about Carolina. I love Teddy Bridgewater. I really do, and I think this is going to work in Carolina. What's your takeaway on it?
Colin, I think it was the best move of the week. And it's nothing against Cam Newton. Cam Newton has an incredible NFL career. And this is just a fresh start with a new coach and a new owner. And I'll tell you why. It gets them out of purgatory. Again, because of what's going on in the real world, outside of the football world, there was going to be no contact with Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers on a day-to-day basis. So they were waiting on a prognosis on his foot. They were waiting to see if his shoulder's 100%, like it was trending towards the end. And in this case, they go, and with no one expecting them to make a move for a quarterback, they swipe Teddy Bridgewater, who had multiple offers, and they bring him in and say, okay, we have our franchise guy, and here's the wrinkle to it. Teddy played for Joe Brady, their new offensive coordinator, who's a 30-year-old mastermind who was with LSU last year. He played with Joe Brady when Joe Brady was with the Saints 2 years ago. So Teddy has a connection there. So they're already aware of the offense. He gets there. He picks it straight up, and they go. And Colin, you've been in this world for as long as you have. I don't think I've ever met someone who has a negative thing to say about Teddy Bridgewater. So he comes in, fresh start. Yeah, they might have lost a lot of talent this offseason, and it might not be as clean as they want with Cam Newton. But without knowing what Cam Newton's health is going to be, and without having day-to-day contact with him because of the current restrictions, this one is like, all right, we have a quarterback for next year, and that's it. And he's a great guy, and we're going to go to war with him. The next team you said was the Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
I thought what they did was fantastic. And I think getting DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson in a later round pick is a great move. But I'll tell you, I was at the Combine, and I was having dinner with the general manager of the Cardinals, Steve Keim.
Yeah.
And I was having dinner with Cliff Kingsbury, who's the head coach, at the Combine. And the table next to us was Bill O'Brien. And I am having now trying to piece it all back together, and they all exchanged pleasantries and whatever. I'm wondering if there was any discussions at that dinner table that I wasn't aware of, if those dinner discussions led to something else. But there certainly were pleasantries exchanged back in February, and I have a feeling that this deal might have been a few weeks in the making, not just an overnight happening.
Joe Burrow, a reporter, Miami Herald, says Miami is willing to give a crate of picks to Cincinnati. I don't think the Bengals have the guts to move off Burrow. What do you make of the story?
The Dolphins have 3 first-round picks.
I know.
3. That is a bounty. If you could tell me that the Miami Dolphins have their number one quarterback and they come out of this draft and they feel like Joe Burrow is head and shoulders better than Tua and they don't want to wait for the injury to heal, I have no problem with that trade. And I know it sounds wild to think 3 first-round picks, but that's why you stockpiled the picks.
Yeah.
Thing with Burrow is this. There's still questions whether Burrow is dying to be a Cincinnati Bengal or not. If that's the case, if I'm the Dolphins and I like Burrow more than Tua, I knock down every door and I try to get him and say, let's all give us an out here. Let's give us an out here. We'll make a trade. You guys take the 5, and we can also, you know, take our other 18 and 23 or whatever else the picks are. But to me, this is a very fascinating swap, and I don't discount that rumor at all. I think Burrow and the Dolphins would be a good mix if they think Burrow is their number one guy.
God, you're great, Schrager.
You're great, dude. I've had a wild few days. I relocated my family. Don't cry for me. There's a lot of people worse off. But can I just tell you how nice it is for you to be on air talking football and putting pause on everything going on in the world right now? I'm being dead serious, Colin. It is a huge relief for everyone, and we appreciate you, man.
Schrags, you're one of the best guys in our business, and I say that despite all the things you just said. You're just not because of what I just said. You're a good dude, and I've said that many times. In our industry, there are not everybody is Peter Schrager, and I love you, man. Thanks.
I love you too, Colin. Have a great rest of your show.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Adam Schefter came out this morning, excellent NFL reporter, said, since word surfaced that Brady's expected to land in Tampa, an unexpected high number of players have reached out to the Buccaneers to let them know they want to play with him. It's the LeBron James effect. Here's the thing, and Bill Belichick, when I lived in Connecticut, one of the really cool things about living in Connecticut was all the prep schools. They looked like Hogwarts. They were all over the place. I grew up in a state, Washington State. We didn't have them. Nevada didn't have them. California didn't have many. One of the things I always loved about Connecticut, living there for 10 or 11 years, was the tradition. Sometimes a little rigid, stodgy, and a little too heavy into tradition. The prep schools were unbelievable. You drive on campus, I got nothing like it where I grew up. And they were like 2 miles from my house. You go over a hill and see this amazing, Avon Old Farms is one of the classic ones. And the New England system always reminds me of the classic prep school. Everybody wears the same uniform. No independent thinking. Behave, intense studying, one way to see the world. It's cool. It's heavy into tradition. Tampa is not like that. Tampa is expressive with Bruce Arians and loose. It is a big, fun public school. It's fun, it's loose, it's expressive, and that's who Bruce Arians is. No risk it, no biscuit. That's his term. So, this is one of these things where I think Brady is going to go to Tampa Bay and tighten them up a little bit. And I also think Bruce Arians is going to loosen Tom up. I think Tom's funny. I think Tom's verbal. We've seen him do a lot of funny, interesting things on Instagram. He can be manipulative in game playing. He's fun. He likes it. He likes the new platforms. I think he's going to laugh more. I do think Tom Brady's arm is still very good. These reports I hear about Brady can't throw downfield. The hell games are you people watching? Tom Brady's still got a top 10 arm in the NFL. It's not Stafford, maybe. I'm not saying it's Stafford, but it's Russell Wilson, isn't it? It's not Mahomes. It's not Carson Wentz. It's not Matt Stafford. It's in the same class as Russell Wilson. We don't talk about his arm. So I think this whole thing, I think Brady was at a prep school. Now he's going to a really fun public, and I think he's going to make the public school a little tighter, but it's also going to make him a little more expressive, laugh more, little looser, a lot of fun. I think everybody wins here. I think everybody wins. I think New England's going to rebuild. I don't think they're going to go after, they didn't want Bridgewater, according to reports, didn't want Phillip Rivers. I think they're going with Jarrett Stidham, going to rebuild a little bit. They've got so much equity because they've won so many games. Like the Golden State Warriors, they can do it. But I'm excited for Tom. I think Tom is much more expressive, and I also think Belichick was lucky. Belichick, in fact, let me look this up real quick before I get to our next guest. I'm going to look this up. I saw Belichick's press release the day after Tom left. Did you notice the first thing Belichick talked about? It wasn't about winning. It wasn't about winning. His first quote, Tom lived and perpetuated our culture on a daily basis. Belichick's not going to get that with the next guy. Aaron Rodgers has an opinion. Peyton Manning had an opinion. Dan Marino had an opinion. Brady is the only other guy I can think of like this is Tim Duncan with the Spurs. A superstar willing to completely buy in and be totally committed to the coach's way of life and the coach's culture. Brady and Tim Duncan are like, okay, you lead me, I'll listen. Most of these star basketball players, LeBron, you're going to do it kind of LeBron's way. Kobe, I'll listen to you, Phil, but we're going to do it my way. Peyton Manning had opinions. Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, and I love all of them. But, the first thing Belichick mentioned was not winning in his press release. It was Tom was not a player. He bought into our program. He bought into my program. Belichick's going to miss that. That is not every superstar. And superstars now make more money than ever, are more, not entitled, more empowered than ever. I think it's very interesting. A 10-minute break from football in the NBA. I met Dr. Drew Pinsky about 5 years ago at a social gathering. Couldn't meet him today because of social distancing. And I met him and his wife and friends, and immediately struck by his common sense, his intelligence, his empathy, his curiosity. The Dr. Drew podcast daily. He's on YouTube. Ask Dr. Drew. Dr. Drew After Dark. Multiple New York Times bestsellers. And I thought for 10 minutes as I'm watching television with my friends, and I'll talk to my friends and text them, and I say, is the media slightly panicking here? Can we really use Italy as our barometer? And I want to bring in and Drew Pinsky right now. Can I start? Let me start with this. First of all, Drew, thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for giving me a 10-minute break from all this by listening to a little Tom Brady talk. That was very appealing.
All right. Thank you. So let me just take Italy. Italy is now being used as a barometer for the United States. But
right.
Italy has 60 million people.
Yeah.
It's a country the size of Michigan.
Right.
It is the oldest European country. I think 23% of their citizens are above 50 or above 60. I saw yesterday that 99% of Italian deaths, people over 79 with medical conditions. I see our media saying, look at Italy, that's us. And I say, well, it's kind of a different sensibility. Or am I wrong on that, that we should look at Italy and that's what's going to happen?
No, you are nearly correct, which is the sense that we are not going to be Italy. I've had several teleconferences with Italian physicians, and they freely admit they were unprepared, they did not see it coming, and they do not have the adequate resources. We are prepared. The reason we won't become Italy is we have stamped this thing down, and we have massively prepared our system. No one does better than the American healthcare system when it comes to preparing resources, delivering resources, and innovation. We are simply the best in the world. And whenever you see these evaluations of U.S. healthcare, that sort of thing is never measured. And you watch. We, even in places where the system gets stressed, we will respond. I have deep faith in my peers and the healthcare system. And I would urge everyone, just listen to Anthony Fauci. Let him be your North Star. I've been in around him since the AIDS epidemic. The guy knows exactly what he's doing. Just do what he tells you, and we will be fine. That's it. That's all we have to worry about. Everything else you see in the press is them trying to capture your eyes, and they're not helping things. They're making things much worse, to the point now where the panic is worse than the outbreak.
There is one thing I was told about 2 weeks ago, long story short, I was skiing in a nice place, and I met a couple of CEOs.
Hope it wasn't the Italian Alps.
No, it was not. It was Deer Valley, Utah, which, if you've never been, is wonderful.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be I met a CEO from New York and Seattle. They were in the locker room area. And they both said their primary concern was the shortages of beds in America. Now, and I think that's the one thing that I've worried about is that, listen, I was in a hospital 2 weeks ago because I had stomach virus. And listen, it's a stressed system at times. Is that a real concern for you going forward?
Because it is a real concern, they are planning for that. I can only speak to what's going on in California. Our governor identified two massive hospitals that he plans to staff up, has got a backlog of ventilators and equipment coming in, and has positioned a U.S. Navy ship off the course, off the shore here, for any overflow. We are completely prepared. I was not always a Newsom fan, which is our governor's name here in California.
Gavin Newsom.
But yesterday I was deeply impressed with his preparedness. He is not leaving this open to chance. We are ready. And I would argue that pretty much every state, and by the way, I don't know if you saw the press conference a few minutes ago, but everything's coming from three states and something like 10 counties. These are the areas that need the preparation, and they are preparing.
I did not see the press conference because I was entertaining America.
I appreciate that too, by the way. We need that. We need this. We need to get our minds off of this and certainly take our eyes off the press, who are trying to attract us with language to a couple things. I mean, I saw the word soaring just a minute ago, that cases are soaring. No, we expect at least a doubling of cases just from the backlog of testing coming in. We expect that. We're going to see that. That doesn't mean the transmission rate is changing. Stop it with those headlines. Also, we had politicians talking about sheltering in place. I made a big issue with that on a local television program because shelter in place is a command to barricade yourself in a room. And God bless Mayor of Los Angeles, Garcetti, he adjusted his language because I got on that pretty hard. You are not helping people by announcing that they need to barricade themselves in a room. That's not the CDC recommendations. Just look at the CDC recommendations and follow them carefully.
You know, are there, and again, this, I'm going to sound naive, so, you know, mitigate this for me. Any current vaccines that
underway.
You can,
that there's actually a phase one, soon to be phase two trial coming underway. And yes, there are three very fine vaccines in a record time. Not only vaccines, but therapies are coming online as well. There's some excellent treatments. I mean, those treatments within a week, we will know how well they are working, and it's looking very good. And some of them are harmless, things like hydroxychloroquine. I have a case right now that I'm watching pretty carefully, and if she has a recurrence, I'm putting her on the Plaquenil because it really dramatically decreases the amount of viral production.
So the way vaccines work, could you have a vaccine, say, for malaria, and it just so happens it can help the coronavirus? Do vaccines ever work that way?
You're asking a very broad question, and not as it pertains to malaria, that's for sure. But sometimes things like a flu vaccine will help with other immune responses.
Okay.
But this one is going to be very targeted. We have to get this one right without causing adverse effect.
The other thing, this, you know, I told a friend the other day, I said, listen, a loss of life is, it's daunting, right?
Yeah.
For any family.
Yes.
But this, although anybody can contract this, Dr. Drew, it does appear to be affecting, in terms of fatalities, older people. I saw
Correct.
A story yesterday in Italy where 79 years old was the average, where people, 99% of the people passing were 79 or older. So is this rare, where a virus, it can be contracted by anybody, but in terms of who it's affecting, the deceased, it appears to be a specific 75-plus compromised physical health group.
Yes, it does. That's not saying that that's the only group that needs hospitalization. Or
right,
intensive
right.
care. It's the group that dies, number one. Well, let's compare it to other viruses. It's always problematic to compare epidemics, but let's just talk about other epidemics. Our last pandemic was in 2009. It was the H1N1 swine flu.
Yeah.
Infected 1 billion people, killed 500,000, primarily 40 to 60-year-olds. So that one was different in that way. We usually expect influenzas to disproportionately affect old people. We have so far in this country 18,000 deaths from influenza, 115 from corona. So we're doing pretty good.
Yeah. Is there... So you've been very comforting so far.
Trying.
It is, what will be something, what are the legs? When you look, what will be the information you get in a week or two and you
yep.
go, okay, we're not clear, but we've reached a point, I feel very good.
Yes. If we're around 20,000 cases on Monday, and if we don't go much above that by Friday, we are going to have a series of points on the epidemiology graph where things are going to start to look pretty good. If we are up around 100,000 by next Friday, we have to be very diligent and really keep things clamped down. So at 20 by Monday, I will feel, even around 20, I will feel very, very good. Now, I have to tell you, this is my own assessment of the math. I'm still waiting for Dr. Fauci to speak about this. He has been somewhat closed-mouthed, closed-lipped about targets and where to feel good and when we can go back to work and that kind of thing. My position has always been that the tougher putt in all of this is getting us back to work in a timely manner without causing another outbreak. That's going to be a tough call.
Yeah. You know, again, and I sound obviously like a non-medical professional. My concern at this point...
But I thought you were one. What's going on here? I'm confused.
No, I just know football. I worry now as much about the economic situation, the loss
yeah.
of millions of jobs.
Yes.
As much as the virus. So, again, I don't want to sound that I'm lacking empathy, but the economic situation frightens me.
So every time a medical personnel makes an intervention, we are charged with the credo of do no harm. So we always do a risk-benefit analysis. Once we do an intervention, what are the potential adverse effects we have caused? And we weigh these things. It's not just we go, clamp this thing down, control the virus, without also considering all the potential effects on other aspects of our lives, other aspects of our health care, other aspects of our well-being. And a lot of that has been sacrificed right now, and that needs to be considered very highly. I think some areas have gone too far and are adversely affected. I've been critical of the language people are using.
Yes.
And I've been critical of some of the excesses that local measures are taking, and I keep advocating just follow Dr. Fauci. Just follow him. He knows what he's doing. You don't necessarily have to go beyond that. However, to the extent that we have, it's incumbent on all of us to be good citizens and do whatever the local measures are we're being asked to do.
Yeah, I'm a little discouraged by the hoarding of food at grocery stores.
Oh, hey, listen, in Los Angeles now, people have started stealing from people as they come out of the grocery store.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not good.
The Dr. Drew podcast daily with Adam Carolla. Ask Dr. Drew, Dr. Drew After Dark, YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, author of New York Times bestsellers. Such a pleasure. You're so busy and taxed on the requests.
It's good to talk to you. I just want people to know we're looking out for their well-being. Don't get into the spin on social media. Take your eyes off the television a bit. Don't listen to the crazy rhetoric that is designed to capture your eyes and scare you. We're going to do fine if we follow Dr. Fauci's recommendations. Things are looking good right now. It's a challenge. It's a serious situation. But we don't want to do too much harm to our lives where we have problems coming back. That's the navigation, getting that, threading that needle properly.
You know, we are good at challenges in America, Dr. Drew, and I told friends this. I said this, and I said this, post 9/11, our aviation standards went up in terms of security, and I think post-corona, we will be more prepared for the next virus, which, by the way, it could be a virus that attacks our children.
Yes, it could be way worse. And we will. The good news about a crisis like this is we will evolve. We are evolving. We are increasing telemedicine. Where kids are learning how to get taught from home. We are re-entrenching with our families. We are starting to look at our priorities and values. It's not going to be a pure negative. We will come out of this evolved in ways that will benefit us. And certainly next flu season, we will take it more seriously and wash our hands and social distance, which we've been trying to get people to, and get your flu shot, which we've been trying to get people to do forever.
Yeah, new normals,
yep.
Actually. Drew, thank you so much.
Thanks, Colin.